Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products, and businesses, real life stories. It's all right here for you with this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Remember to visit us online, too, at besteveryou.com. And now here's your host, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, Elizabeth Hamilton Guarino.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and happy April 10th. We've got two really cool people with us today. We have the Carltons with us. I just almost goofed it up again, you guys. The Carltons. We have Mira Carlton and Jason Carlton with us. They are the co-founders of Carlton Nutrition and the co-authors of the groundbreaking book, Naked Calories. Welcome, you guys. How are you today?
Thanks for having us. We're great.
Doing well. Yeah. Thank you.
Very excited to have you with us. I want to, before we get into this in too much depth, I want to direct you to their website, which is CarltonNutrition.com. That is spelled CarltonNutrition.com. And their book, Naked Calories, is on there. And we are excited to have you guys. So hang on and let's. You guys are the founders of Carlton Nutrition, and it's actually called Carlton Institute of Lifestyle Medicine. And you've dedicated your lives to the connection between micronutrient sufficiency and the prevention and the reversal of lifestyle diseases, including obesity. Do I have that pretty well under control there?
Absolutely. Obesity, cancer research, diabetes, heart disease, and from my past background, osteoporosis.
Okay. Now, one of you is a certified nutritionist, is that correct?
That's me, yes.
Okay, and the other is a PhD?
Correct.
A PhD in?
In nutrition. And I have a strong background in medicine as well. I did pre-med in molecular and microbiology before kind of settling on nutrition. But nutrition has always been a passion of mine, and so it's what I settled on finally in the end.
That's funny. Now, what made you guys do this?
Well, I guess it all starts, I was a publicist. I had an amazing job in New York. I had my own company. And I was, you know, doing the film premieres and all the things that, you know, as a 20-year-old you think are probably the coolest things to do, free clothes and great parties. And then, you know, it's like every other female, you know, who gives a pair of shoes, you're just happy as a lark. But I just started feeling really bad. I mean, my lower back hurt a lot, and it wasn't getting any better. And it just got to the point where I couldn't even do my job anymore, and I couldn't stay in my heels all day. I couldn't walk, and I had nothing else to blame it on. I thought I was, you know, I went to the gym. I thought I was healthy. Finally, I went to the doctor because I couldn't move, and he told me I had advanced osteoporosis.
Really?
I had the bone density of an 80-year-old woman when I turned 30. Which is not what anyone wants to hear when they're just going in and thinking, you know, they're just going to say, I'm overworked. It was quite a shock to me. It was quite a shock to my doctor. And they basically said, you're going to be on medication for the rest of your life and you're never going to get any better.
And how are we today?
And that wasn't going to suit me at all.
No.
I thought there had to be another solution.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
I said I can tell by the way you talk that there was no way that was going down that way at all.
No. I had already tasted life. Life was good, and I didn't want to be living, you know, dependent on people. I mean, I was already being dependent on other people to take care of me at this point. So I had to actually sell my company and move to Florida. Luckily, my older sister decided to take me in, and I spent a long time trying to do research as to what had caused me to get this way, and I realized that I had unbeknownst to me, really bad habits. I was nutritionally not treating my body well, poor lifestyle habits as well, and both of those things were causing me to become really depleted of my essential micronutrients or vitamins and minerals. So because I was so deficient, I got osteoporosis.
Okay, Jason, what about you? How did you get involved in all of this?
I've been interested in nutrition since I was just a small boy. I did my first diet, if you call it that, at about age 7. So I've always been fascinated by it. You know, growing up, my uncle on my mother's side, it was a spitting image of Hulk Hogan, if you know who he is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
As a young boy, I just looked up to this mammoth man, and I was amazed at how he was able to, you know, kind of manipulate his body through food and exercise and nutrition. So I was really taken by that from an early age. And my first diet was a Jell-O diet. So my parents had given me a book. For some holiday or another, called Fitter Fat. I don't even know if it's still out there or not, but I read it, and the basic concise message in the book was eat less calories and burn more, or eat less food and exercise more, and you will become thin. Now, I wasn't an overweight child necessarily, but I wanted to look like my uncle. You know, I wanted to look like that fit person. So I decided to try it, and I made myself calorie-free Jell-O. And I ate that calorie-free Jell-O for about 2 days until I couldn't move anymore. And that was my first lesson in nutrition, that calories also mean energy.
Yeah.
And from there, I've just become fascinated with nutrition, and I've really delved into every different type of philosophy out there. I think we've studied, you know, almost every type of dietary philosophy, from low fat to veganism to low carb to paleo, you name it, we've looked at it. And over time, people started asking me, you know, would you be able to help me with my diet? Because I wasn't schooled in nutrition early on in my career. And I said, you know, I'll help you with it. And I just developed a love of working with people, seeing how much a person can change their lives when they really take nutrition into account and start eating better foods.
So do you guys both think that everybody is different? Or do you think there's a standard answer for everyone as far as foods you should consume?
Biochemically, you know, we love to say that everybody's individual biochemically. So, I mean, obviously, you know, I think anybody who has studied the human body, and certainly, you know, even with drug, you know, manufacturing, we can look at even an aspirin tablet, you know, anything. So, you know, somebody takes it and one person gets one response and somebody else takes it and you could get a completely different response. So I think biochemically there's no doubt that we're all different in that way. But when we're looking at it from a big picture, I think also we're much more similar than we may give ourselves credit for. So I think that there is one standard way, a pathway that if everyone were to follow within some variety of parameters, that would lead to better health and would lead away from poor health.
Yeah. Now, are you guys familiar with Eat Clean and Toscarino and all that?
Absolutely.
We do a ton of stuff with Tosca on Best Ever You and so forth.
Put out beautiful books.
Yeah. Well, I wondered, you know, what you guys, you know, think about that, because I also suffer from amazing food allergies. I have anaphylaxis to nuts and fish and shellfish and peanuts and all sorts of stuff, and it's life or death. And I've found a workaround for that is, hey, you know, don't eat that processed cookie and don't eat that frozen food and don't eat things with more than a few ingredients and things like that. And my body seems to be very, very happy eating that green smoothie every morning. Do you think
for
people?
Yeah, we find that the less boxes, bags, and bottles that a person consumes, that then you're going to be healthier. In fact, these things are what we call naked calories. That's why we named our book that, because mm-hmm. they're just filled with calories and a whole lot of mysterious components, food-like substances that create these foods that don't deliver any real nutritional value. They don't give you your vitamins and minerals that you need to sustain health. We're absolutely in the same thought pattern on that really you want real food. You want food that is rich in micronutrients. So you want to find things that are all natural. And, if you're allergic to wheat or you have gluten intolerance, absolutely remove it from your diet. In fact, a lot of people who don't even have gluten intolerance do better with it removed. Same with white refined sugar. Those are some of the easiest things that we would always tell people to remove from the diet.
Let's go with the osteoporosis thing for a minute. How have you been able to help yourself with food and nutrition and diet and maybe exercise even to remedy that?
Things are important. Every single one of those things you mentioned, you have it completely right. So in terms of food, I mean, only eat foods that are real foods. Lots of things actually strip you of micronutrients, and especially calcium. So soda, for instance, the phosphoric acid in it is going to strip your body of calcium. if you're eating a lot of sweets, you're probably also depleting your calcium levels. Because the sugar actually requires your body to give it calcium in order for it to metabolize the sugar you're taking in. Sugar delivers no micronutrients, so it actually robs you as you're eating it. Caffeine tends to take away small portions of the calcium as well. So it's in noticing foods that you should be taking in, like the calcium-rich foods, as well as things that you should be leaving out, like things that have oxalic acid. I always talk about the story that I used to eat a spinach salad every day because someone had once told me it was rich in calcium. And, you know, I don't know if you've heard that, but they tell that to a lot of people. And the problem with the spinach is it's loaded with something called oxalic acid, which actually robs your body of calcium. So there's a lot of foods out there that are things you should stay away from. In terms of exercise, weightlifting, weight-bearing exercises are really important for osteoporosis. I continually do them. That's something that's mandatory for us to build your bone. As far as lifestyle habits, you know, there's other things that you can do. Like, for instance, obviously not smoking. Drinking actually depletes certain micronutrients. So every single one of those things, when they work together, it's not one thing that's going to fix it. It's getting all those things in place, and then you can slowly rebuild the bone.
Okay. On your website, I'm on your website. I love this. I'm looking at the Calton Project. I was wondering if you guys could tell. I'm losing my voice, too. Sorry that it's in and out here. I've been on the radio a lot this past week. I was wondering if you could tell people about the Calton Project and what that's all about.
Sure. The Calton Project kind of came about after the two-year period where Mira came to me and we worked with her to reverse her osteoporosis. If I back up just a second, when Mira first kind of came to me to talk to me about her osteoporosis, I was really involved in what we kind of call the macronutrient wars or philosophies. You know, I was heavily involved in trying to figure out the magic ratios or the magic dietary patterns of what is going to make us healthy on that macronutrient scale, proteins, carbs, fat. How do we manipulate? Is it a low-fat diet? Is it a low-carb diet? Is it a Mediterranean diet? You know, what are we doing with our foods? But Mira really put a mirror up to my face, and she really showed me that there are some health conditions, osteoporosis being one, high blood pressure being another, high cholesterol being another, diabetes being another, that really have a lot more to do with those micronutrients, those essential vitamins and minerals that are prevalent now being stripped from our food, so we're eating naked calories. So when we looked at what we were going to do with Mira, it really didn't matter if she was eating a low-fat diet or a low-carb diet, so much as it mattered that she was getting enough of those essential micronutrients. So after we reversed that, we looked at each other and said, you know, maybe here in America we're really focusing on one half of the problem, and we're really kind of, we've left out the other half, that micronutrient equation. So we went on this six-year, 100-country, seven-continent journey that we called the Calton Project, and our main goal there was to go to remote, semi-remote, and urban areas and really sit with and observe and talk to and really get an opportunity to see the nutritional and lifestyle habits of a vast variety of people all around the world so that we could learn what the people who were healthy were doing right and what the people who were unhealthy were doing wrong outside of the typical textbook scenario. We really wanted to be there and feel it and see it for ourselves and really experience it. Really the only way that you can is to travel there and really talk with and see these people.
Now, do you, in doing this, do you think that nutritional deficiency is basically the link between all disease? Because I kind of think sugar is the root of all evil, but it might just be one tiny little bit of it. But did you notice in your travels anything that had, was there a common theme?
Oh, absolutely. And what you said, that sugar is the root of all evil, you know, sugar is definitely one of the biggest, what we call everyday micronutrient depleters. But when we take a picture at sugar and what sugar is doing, why sugar is so evil, it's like Mira said earlier, sugar, one of the reasons why sugar is so evil is outside of the fact that it spikes your insulin, so it causes fat storage and kind of throws your metabolism all off kilter, it also contains no micronutrients and actually robs your body of those essential micronutrients in order to be metabolized. So it's a contributing factor to our bigger picture, what we would call micronutrient deficiency epidemic or pandemic when we look at it around the world. So we actually considered micronutrient deficiency to be one of the most widespread dangerous health conditions of the 21st century because it's really that it's a hidden pandemic that most people aren't aware of. You know, we'll pinpoint it and we'll say, well, I know the sugar's bad for me, but why? And when we dig deeper, like we just did there, we see that sugar is a micronutrient depleter. You read other books and talk about how wheat might be bad for you on different levels. And when we dig deeper, we learn that it's probably because it's so processed and so refined that it's not containing a lot of the micronutrients. And it also contains elements, like Mira mentioned earlier, the phytic acid, which is also, again, a micronutrient depleter. When we think about alcohol consumption, we all know that moderate drinking has been shown to be beneficial in some degrees because of the antioxidant quantity of especially things like red wine. But what we also have to find out is, hey, alcohol can upset the ability of your body to absorb micronutrients in the gastrointestinal tracts. So again, it can be a micronutrient depleter. When we put all these everyday micronutrient depleters together, we get kind of a disturbing picture of micronutrient deficiency being at the root of so many of today's lifestyle diseases. You know, again, being these things like high blood pressure. I mean, if you've read the DASH diet, you know that there's this collaborative of over 100 different universities and physicians come together, and they say, wow, we've come to a realization. High blood pressure is really a micronutrient deficiency. If you create a sufficiency in your magnesium, in your calcium, in your potassium, either through food or supplementation, we can, more times than not, reverse this or prevent this high blood pressure. And they've done this with many different health conditions and diseases.
So we're getting a tweet to us. Somebody wants to know, what is a micronutrient?
Okay.
We've used that word a bunch of times, so somebody...
Absolutely, and it doesn't have to be a scary word. In fact, basically, it's your vitamins and your minerals and your essential fats. So it's things like vitamin C, vitamin A, vitamin D, you've heard of these things, and calcium and magnesium. And it also includes your omega-3s and omega-6s, those essential fats that we hear so much about in the news. And what these things do is that each of them serves its own function in your body, and they all work as sort of as a team. And when you don't have enough of them, that's when a little bit, just we call them the holes in your house of optimal health. Your body is your house of optimal health. And all these little things, your micronutrients, come in and build a happy, strong foundation and house. Now, if you don't have them on just a short day, you're deficient in just a few micronutrients, then you get a hole in your house. And that could be just bad sleep or a little ache or pain or low immunity. However, if you, for long periods of time, aren't getting in your essential micronutrients and you're missing, for example, calcium, vitamin D, vitamin K, you're going to get a long latency, what they call diseases, things like osteoporosis, cancer. That's when something's deficient for a long period of time. So it's those things you've already heard about. We don't want to throw too much new stuff. It's just your vitamins, your minerals, and your essential fats that you need to stay healthy and strong.
Okay. What is the Calton Institute, and what is lifestyle medicine?
The Calton Institute, we basically developed the Calton Institute to create a credentialing system for something we call CMS, or Certified Micronutrient Specialists. So after kind of learning and really digging ourselves so deep into the micronutrient story, we realized that most nutritional professionals like ourselves, medical professionals like a lot of our colleagues, and even health professionals, personal trainers, yoga instructors, we just don't know that much about micronutrients. So we wanted to have a place where people could come and take a course where they could learn more. If you're a licensed or certified health, nutritional or medical professional, you can come and we offer a course called the Certified Micronutrient Specialist Program. And that really just, it helps you to dig deeper into what the micronutrients are, how they affect our overall health, how your patients or your clients could benefit from learning about micronutrient sufficiency, and where they can get a designation in that.
Okay. In the United States where everybody is so obese, can you be obese and be micronutrient deficient?
Absolutely. We actually say it's the hidden hunger, because actually, in a lot of studies, they've actually determined that people who are underweight and people who are overweight are equally deficient in essential micronutrients. And we've also discovered that, you know, you can't blame a lot of people who are overweight for overeating. What we're learning more and more now is that your body is requiring these micronutrients, and it is screaming to you to try to take them in. So it's telling you to eat something, to take in the micronutrients. That's the only way your body knows how to get it. Now, what's happening is, unfortunately, it's telling you and shouting for calcium, and you're grabbing a bag of cookies. So, unfortunately, this hidden hunger isn't ever being, you know, filled. And so people get more and more deficient. The more deficient you are, it actually causes you to gain more weight. Deficiency causes food cravings. Deficiency causes an inability to taste your food properly so that you don't feel full. So, I mean, definitely, these two things go absolutely hand in hand.
Okay. And so if you're obese or if you're overweight and you say, okay, I'm going to go on some popular diet, I'm going to go on the one that doesn't have carbs, I'm going to go on the one that you just eat protein, or you just, I don't know, you know all of them. I don't have all of them memorized. Do you think that those help or hurt?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And I think that the answer is they help and they hurt. I think they help immediately, because, you know, mentally, when a person decides to go on a program like that, you know, what they need is they need that positive reinforcement and that immediate gratification of, okay, I can do this. I can control my weight. I lost 5 pounds, you know, this week, or I lost 10 pounds this month. And so in that way, mentally and physically too, because when you take your blood work and you look at your checkup, as you lose weight, there's obviously positive benefits from that. But I think it can hurt in other ways too, because every single time a person loses weight, 90-some percent of the time, they gain that weight back again, and sometimes they even gain more. And so I often try to talk about the fact that I'd rather a person not go on a diet just to lose the 50 pounds and gain the 60 back. I'd rather them really learn about nutrition and become educated rather than just grab the next fad diet. So in that way, I think it hurts, because, you know, eventually what ends up in my office or is the person sitting across the desk that says, you know, I've been on 6 diets over the last 6 years. They've all failed. Now I give up, and it's lap band surgery for me, or it's gastric bypass for me, because you know what? These diets just don't work. Here's the secret. All diets work. They all work to get you to lose weight. That's not the hard part. The hard part is to maintain that weight loss and create a lifestyle out of these diets. So for us, we like to use two words, realistic and sustainable. If it's not realistic and sustainable, then I'd rather not see the client even start down the path, because at the end of the day, they're only going to end up right back where they started from, more discouraged and oftentimes heavier than they started in the first place.
Can I just add, I just wanted to comment also that if we think about when people start dieting, I mean, we've all gone on diets, and one of the first things you do is you limit the amounts of food you take in. You know, you have smaller portions. Well, when you take smaller portions, you're taking in less micronutrients. So automatically, that's not great. Additionally, a lot of people eat the same thing every single day when they're on a diet, or, you know, you rotate your things, but you get used to certain foods when you're on a diet because they're fast and easy, and you feel comfortable with the ratios. And that, again, if you eat the same food every day, you're taking in only the things in those foods. You're limiting the amount of micronutrients that are actually being delivered to your body. Additionally, a lot of people tend to make large meals and then package them prepackaged in their fridge for work and for, you know, throughout the day, so that people don't have to cook because they're making these recipes. And when you do that and you're reheating your food, people don't often think about the fact that reheating food and leaving in the refrigerator actually depletes micronutrients the longer that they're left there. So exercise, again, the more you go on a diet, you usually pair that with exercise. And the more you exercise, the more you're utilizing specific micronutrients. Now, we think exercise is fantastic. We are completely proponents of exercise. But one thing you have to be aware of is the more you're sweating and utilizing working out hard, the more micronutrients you're actually utilizing as you do it. So you have to replenish.
Yeah. You guys must be the biggest fans of fast food ever.
I actually taught my nieces, I'm trying to get them to every time they pass a fast food place just to go, boo, as a game. Because rather than, you know, they're only like 1 year old. So I'm trying to get them geared up now so that they'll never look at it and they're not going to go to those places.
Yeah. Do you, good luck, huh? That's a battle, boy. Do you, okay, so if you're going to go eat out someplace, I noticed you guys are either have a new book coming out in addition to this one, kind of your version of like eat this, not that. Somebody is tweeting us asking about fast food and wondering if, you know, if you're going to eat out to one of the fast food, you know, the like McDonald's or Subway or something like that, is one better than the other, or do you have any comments
sure.
on that without trashing?
No. We never. First of all, we don't believe in trashing anybody.
Yeah.
I think the best way to do it is just kind of work together and, you know, get to the answers in a civilized manner. So yeah. I mean, up until really recently, it would be hard to advocate a fast food restaurant. But recently, there's been a new chain out called Chipotle. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Yep.
And they
yep.
use grass-fed beef, and they're really kind of looking at it from a perspective of trying to use local and organic and grass-fed. So I think I would recommend somebody looking into that chain. I think that would be a great way to go.
Also, just little things like take the roll off the – I mean, if you want to eat a burger, take the roll off and get rid of the wheat. Try to make smarter decisions when you are there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I
Could
wouldn't
you,
be
– oh,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, is there any goodness in, say, going to McDonald's and maybe having a salad?
Sure. I mean, there's goodness
like –
There's goodness in all the foods. Food is going to give you, you know, your fats, your proteins, and your carbs, those macronutrients we talked about. And then they're still going to contain micronutrients. Our goal, kind of what we do with our client, what we talk about in our book, is to become what we call a nutrivore. And this is different than a vegan or a vegetarian or a carnivore or in any of these other philosophies. A nutrivore really is just a person who says, you know what, I'm going to try to get as many of these essential micronutrients, these essential vitamins, minerals, and essential fats that I hear all about in the news that are published, you know, every day in and out in these peer-reviewed nutritional and medical journals that I know or I'm beginning to know are at the heart of my overall health. I need to make sure I get enough vitamin D. I need to make sure I get enough calcium. I need to make sure I get enough of all those essential vitamins and minerals. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to get as many as I can within reason. Obviously, we're not advocates of mega dosing on the micronutrients. They're called micro because you only need a few of them. But because they're not in our foods anymore, we oftentimes on a normal, typical diet just do not get enough. So we want to make sure that the foods we bring in are quality foods. So we really focus on quality, not quantity. And where the fast food restaurants fall down in that arena is that their foods are often so processed that they just don't contain any micronutrients. So, you know, other than the fact that there might be, you know, a lot of fat and carbs together, and those two are never great as a combination, so they may, you know, spike your insulin and cause fat gain. The real problem with fast food in our eyes is that they just don't contain a lot of the micronutrients. And so, you know, if you're going to advocate, you know, a third or a quarter of your calories to that fast food, you're just going to continuously fall short on achieving that micronutrient sufficiency. And over time, we believe that that can lead to, you know, health conditions and disease.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about this book you guys wrote. After all of this research and after all of these things that you guys know, you got together and not only got married, but wrote a book.
Yeah, it was a great bonus. I got sick, and luckily I met him. So then I got a husband. That worked out very nicely. And we just, you know, we both got so passionate doing the research while I was getting better that it actually just led to a common passion and then a mutual passion with each other. So it worked out really nicely. And we wrote the book completely together. We found a pattern where we both wrote every single page, and we're enjoying it so much that we have another one coming out and then another one after that. So,
that's
yeah, we're
awesome.
Really enjoying it. We love doing the work together.
So tell me about Naked Calories. What is the book about? How can people buy it? And who's on the cover?
A lot of people think it's Mira, and it literally could be Mira. Although we were away at the time on the Calton Project when they came up with the topic, so it isn't her. So we don't know who it is. It's a model. We don't know who it is on the cover. Naked calories. Let's talk first of all. What is a naked calorie? So we've kind of touched on it, but basically, food has two components: calories and micronutrients. So the calories, of course, are those fats, proteins, and carbs, and the micronutrients are those vitamins, minerals, and essential fats. So what we have today is a situation where those micronutrients are being stripped away from the calorie, hence the title Naked Calories. And the book is about what happens to us and how prevalent micronutrient deficiency is. And one of the major ways micronutrient deficiency is spread is through the eating of these naked calories. And a lot of times people say, well, how is a naked calorie so different than an empty calorie? Empty calories are typically things we already know are bad for us, right? Sugar, candy, fast food, cake, cookies. But naked calories can also be things like fruits, vegetables, meats, chicken, fish, all these types of foods. So it really has more to do with the micronutrient value of the food at the time you eat it, not so much the quality of the food that maybe at the time, the food was harvested or picked or farmed.
Okay.
So the idea of the book was to create a guide for everyone, no matter what dietary their philosophy they're following. You can be a vegan and follow our philosophy of what we call the rich food, poor food philosophy, or you can be a carnivore or anything in between. And the whole idea is to create a guide for you so that you can, a three-step program, simple to follow, so that you can learn and become micronutrient sufficient.
Got it. So how could chicken possibly be bad for you to eat? And I use bad for you in the sense of just using the term. How could that be robbing you of any kind of micronutrient? Because everybody says, well, I'm going to give up the red meat, but I'm going to eat some chicken and maybe have some peas and a salad. Is that good or not so great?
Chicken is a great source of protein. But what we would tell people is if you're going to be considering the micronutrient levels of it, there's certain ways to get chicken that is better than other chicken. So what we would say is that you should look for a chicken that's been pasture-raised. Now, they label chicken in all sorts of ways now. They say it's free-range, it's this. You really want to find out if it's really been pasture-raised. Because if it's been pasture-raised, it's out there in the sunlight. And remember, vitamin D, sunshine, micronutrient. So basically, the animal is getting that same great sunshine that you get, which is, we all know, is beneficial when we're in the sun. So you want a chicken that's getting that same micronutrient balance. It's going out and it's eating what a chicken eats. It's plucking in the ground and eating insects. And it's being raised the way chickens biologically should be raised. So that's going to be a more rich micronutrient form of chicken than, say, a store-bought one that's been living in a dark factory farm with a whole bunch of other ones with no room to run around. And a lot of times, I don't want to get into it, just they're not as healthy as the chickens that are running around in a happy land outside like they should be. Same is true of beef. I mean, you want to look for a grass-fed beef rather than a grain-fed beef. Most beef now is grain-fed. And the problem is cows eat grass. Cows should eat grass. So if you have the option, you should be looking for one that is more micronutrient-rich. And that's not just a little bit more micronutrient-rich. It actually has completely different forms of fat. It actually has a form of fat called CLA, which is a form of fat in the grass-fed beef that is not in the grain-fed beef. And what that fat does is it helps your body metabolize fat. So it's a really good fat that isn't even available in most of the beef that we're fed today.
Yeah. I kind of like this that you're not saying don't eat that. Don't ever eat that. Some people go on a kick and they say no matter what, I'm going to tell you don't ever, ever, ever eat red meat. It's terrible for you or whatever. You seem to be giving us, to say if you're going to eat that, try to do this. You're not. But what I like and what I'm hearing both of you say is you're not commanding everybody to do this a certain way or else.
No, you know what? It's not for us to judge what another person decides they want their dietary philosophy to be. For Mira and I, we really believe that that's a personal choice. And people come to that choice. They don't come to that choice lightly. Some people come to that choice because of their moral values, or some come to it because of certain inabilities to eat certain foods. So they create that dietary profile themselves, and that's great. Well, all we're here to do is teach you how, based on the profile you choose on your own, how to eat the foods that are the most micronutrient rich. And that's really what our second book, which is called Rich Food, Poor Food, is all about. It's about saying that based on whatever food you're eating, we might not personally eat a lot of wheat because our bodies don't necessarily digest wheat very well. I don't think we're gluten intolerant, clinically, but our bodies don't do well with it. So we've chosen that we don't eat a lot of that. That doesn't mean that you have to or another person has to. But what we'll do in Rich Food, Poor Food is we'll take you on that pasta aisle, let's say, if you are a pasta eater, and we're not going to preach to you why it's bad or good, but we're going to tell you that from a micronutrient perspective, you're going to want to buy a pasta that's in a dark box. And that's because B2, or a vitamin called riboflavin, is depleted by light. It's affected by light. So if you buy a pasta in a clear plastic bag that's under these fluorescent lights day in and day out at your grocery store, that's going to be it's going to rob those nutrients. Same thing for milk. That's why they use those opaque containers, because that riboflavin is robbed from light. So we're going to teach you tips like this that are going to help you to choose the most micronutrient-rich foods and avoid the micronutrient-poor ones.
Okay, can we have a little fun with you guys?
Yeah.
We're going to throw two foods up there, and you guys tell people which one they should eat of the two evils. You ready?
Okay.
Snickers bar or fruit snacks?
I would say at that point, whichever one you really like better. Make it worth it.
Jason, what do you think? Snickers bar or fruit snack?
Oh, jeez.
You had to do it. You're sitting there.
I don't. What do you mean by a fruit snack?
Like a bag of fruit snacks, like fruit roll-ups or those little fruit snack things that kids eat. You're going to buy
I guess so. I guess I go with the fruit snack.
Fruit snack. Okay. Like a fudge bar or a fruit bar? Like an ice cream treat kind of thing.
I'd probably go with the fruit bar. I hope it has little chunks of real fruit in it.
On that one, I'd probably go with the fudge snack, just because of the possible benefit of chocolate.
Chocolate, okay. Real butter or every kind of fake butter known to mankind out there?
Oh,
real butter,
absolutely real butter. And if you can get a grass-fed raw real butter, that's even three steps above the plain butter.
Okay. Real sugar or fake, all the different kinds of fake sugar out there?
Well, we're certainly not real sugar, and as far, we are big believers in stevia. So I guess if you consider that a fake sugar, we go with the fake.
But it's an all-natural leaf, so.
Yeah.
Okay, we would, cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Apple juice or orange juice?
Your choice. Orange juice
for the arsenic reasons.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of arsenic in apple juice, isn't there? That's
I'd probably go for the orange. I'm in Florida.
Yeah, we'll support Florida.
Okay. Pork or chicken? Like pork chops, pork, anything.
I think both of us would choose the pork just based on flavor and love of the pork itself.
Okay.
What
about corn cereal or rice cereal based?
Rice cereal.
Rice.
Rice cereal. Interesting. Okay.
What
did you say?
I love cream of rice. It's a guilty pleasure every now and again. There's nothing really wrong with it. It's absolutely delicious.
Okay. In the oatmeal side of things, little packaged things of oatmeal with all the, you know, the brown sugar and cinnamon and the raisins and spice and all that stuff, or like a container of steel oats?
The steel oats, sure, yeah.
Yeah, steel oats.
All right. Granola bar-wise, all those fancy types of Power Bar, Clif Bar, you know, all those kinds of things, or just a plain old granola bar. Is there any difference between energy bars, you know, in the fancy organic section and over in the kids aisle with the granola bars and so forth?
Well, if we're looking for the energy component, you know, I would try to go something that has nuts in it. You know, for us, we'd recommend something with higher protein value rather than just so many carbs and sugar. So if you have a protein-style bar, I would recommend that over, a granola bar.
Okay, that was fun. I'll stop. I won't grill you anymore.
Oh, it's a good game, though.
I think people are liking that on Twitter, though. It's fun. Do you have any more?
No, absolutely. One thing that people should know is that if anyone ever does have questions, we actually love the fact that we've answered every single email that's ever come into us. So
that's cool.
I know that's a strange thing, and you know, maybe people are going to bombard us now. But in all reality, that's probably one of the best times of our day is getting that time to open the emails and to answer the questions. I mean, we have so many people that we know by name now that were like, oh, my God, Bobby Joe lost 15 pounds, and, you know, she hasn't had sugar in 3 weeks. And that's probably the most fulfilling part of every single day.
Yeah.
Is
well,
random people
need to know. Well, I've been on a I personally have been on a sugar detox for 77 days now. I have not had sugar for 77 days.
And how does it feel?
I feel like a new human being.
Yep.
But now I want to start exercising. And exercise. I've always exercised, but I mean like really exercising. Like I want this to be my year where I'm toned and back to normal after having, you know, four kids long ago kind of thing. But so I'm going to be doing that next. But I wanted to kind of get one thing under control, and that was the red licorice and chocolate chip habit that I had.
I had a awesome Swedish fish chip myself.
Yeah. Oh, love them. I mean, I love red licorice. I don't know what is in that stuff, but it is like got my name on it on the package. So I've not had that for a really long time now, and I feel the first week, though, oh, the shakes. It was like, yeah, I've never been on drugs, but I assumed that it was something like that because it was it was a shaky, sweaty week of shakes coming off.
Sugar is actually just as, and if not, studies prove it's more addictive than cocaine.
It
actually hits the same part of the brain. It's amazing when people get off of it how clear-headed they can get.
Yeah, absolutely. All the fog went away, all the... I don't know. That's just, it was wild. There's a it's hard to explain unless you actually detox from sugar what I'm actually talking about. But the fog goes away and the cravings go away. And I'm curious. So I replaced my, you have me worried about spinach a little bit because I replaced my breakfast every day with a green smoothie. And in it is, I have really bad food allergies too, so I'm limited in what I can kind of put in there or not. But so I put in a handful of spinach, a half of a cucumber, a whole pear, four ice cubes, and just kind of like normal water, not tap water or anything, and just mix it up and drink it every day. And I feel like a new human being from that, too. But
that's probably a really good shake for you in the morning. I mean, once you start to look at the oxalic acid, and especially if you don't want a calcium leaching effect, you might switch out that spinach for something like kale or a nice green leafy lettuce, maybe like a red leaf lettuce or something else that's going to give you those same good quality micronutrients found in the green leafy vegetables, but without the such high levels of the oxalic acid.
Yeah, if you don't have a problem with calcium, then I don't know if you have any bone issues.
I do. I got everything else. I'm sure I do. I'll have to go look at that next. I'm about to be 43, so I probably should have that test done. Is that probably a good test to have done in your 40s, maybe?
Absolutely. A DEXA scan is what they're called, and it's very, very easy. They only did one on me that young because of the fact that I was in so much pain. But basically, I think most people get them at their gynecologist's office, and it generally starts around their 40s. I just turned 41, so we're the same age. And most people by this age are just starting to have some signs of osteopenia. And that is the best time to catch it, best time to start looking at these levels of these very specific micronutrients that are so important for osteoporosis because – you know, you can reverse it now or just make sure you don't actually get full-blown osteoporosis.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you don't want to wait till it's so advanced like Mira's. And I think what's happening in America today is really exciting because so many people like yourself and like all of our clients, we're really starting to look at food and we're saying, hey, let's get rid of the sugar. Or, you know what, I'm 40-something, I've had enough of this kind of, you know, living the way that I've been living. I know that this style of eating has kind of put me behind the eight ball as far as health is concerned, and I'm ready to make a change. And we're starting to hear about eating local and the importance of organic and the importance of, you know, getting grass-fed and pastured, you know, chickens and eggs. And this is coming to the forefront of our society. But if we could just take one more step and realize that the reason why we consider these foods to be healthier for us isn't because they contain more fats, carbs, or proteins, but it's because they contain more of those essential micronutrients. And, you know, we're going to beat this like a horse, you know, talking about micronutrients over and over again. And it's because it's so important for people to start realizing that the healthier lifestyle equates to a micronutrient-sufficient lifestyle. That is really the same thing. The reason why vegetables are good for you isn't because of protein, fats, or carbs. It's because they're packed packed with micronutrients. The reason why fish oil is so good for you is because it's a micronutrient. Same thing with all those other quote-unquote healthy foods.
Now, I have three questions lined up in a row here from people tweeting in and so forth. So they're going to be choppy, but we're going to try and get to them here.
Okay.
I have a huge food allergy audience because of my own food allergies and the things I do to advocate for people with food allergies and some of the kids that have passed away from anaphylaxis. And people are asking, you know, if I am allergic to fish or I am allergic to nuts, how do I replenish those nutrients and micronutrients in my body if I really can't eat those things? Is there another way to get those foods in your body in a different form, with the nutrients in a different form?
The fish would be talking about the omega-3s, fatty acids that are found in fish. That's your, you know, omega-3 EPA and DHA that are actually been shown to do so many fantastic things in your body that are anti-inflammatory. Now, what you can do is there's new forms of DHA which are found in algae. So if you have fish issues, you might be able to take the algae form. You can look at it, just look online for a vegan form of DHA, and that would be a great substitute in that area.
Okay.
Right.
And if you're afraid
also,
to do the go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, if you're afraid to do the algae because it sounds seaweedy, fishy, iodine-like, you know, because a lot of people with those seafood, you know, the shellfish allergies are really just allergic to iodine.
Yep.
Is algae scary in that regard?
Well, I if it's scary to the individual, then you know we never recommend somebody do something that they're not comfortable with. I mean, you can have your doctor test you for the allergy. If that really is the case, then you'll definitely want to steer clear of that. But also, you may not just, if you feel uncomfortable with it, you can get the omega-3 from different sources. But I'm going to go into a little bit here why the non-fish, non-algae form is so different than the plant-based form. So a lot of people, when they're getting their omega-3, they say, well, I don't need to worry about it if I'm allergic to fish, because I can get it from flaxseed oil, I can get it from hemp seed oil, I can get it from chia seed. So I can get it from a variety of different ways. Now, that's true, except for there's three forms of the omega-3 that are important. One's called ALA. And that's the typical, that's what we call the starter level of your omega-3. But the two really important forms of the omega-3, like Mira mentioned, are the EPA and the DHA. What your listeners need to understand is that ALA can elongate into EPA, and that EPA will then elongate into DHA. So it's kind of like a waterfall. One becomes the other, and the other will then become the next. They won't go up the stream. DHA will never become EPA, and EPA will never become ALA, okay? So your plant-based omega-3s are all ALA. They don't contain any EPA. They don't contain any DHA. The problem with taking these, or not so much the problem, but what we want to be aware of if we're forced to use these exclusively, is that the conversion rate of ALA to the EPA and then to the DHA is only 5 to 10% and 2 to 5% respectively. So you have to take a lot more. The scenario is you have to take a lot more of the ALA to get those really important EPA and DHAs that our body's really looking for. It's not as easy as just taking a tablespoon of one as the equivalent of a tablespoon to another. It's literally 10 tablespoons of one is equivalent to the one tablespoon of the fish oil.
Yeah, so kind of a bummer in a little bit of a way if you're allergic to fish or shellfish.
Yep.
Yeah, a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah, but there's other ways you can get it too. A lot of the eggs now, I don't know if you're noticing, they're feeding the chicken certain feed that has the EPA and DHA in it, so you can get it through your eggs. Grass-fed beef, if you are eating the beef, get your grass-fed beef, and because ALA and EPA and DHA are found in the grass itself, because it's made through a photosynthesizing method, that's why it can also be found in algae. It's in that beef. So, again, it's not found in the grain-fed beef. So those are other ways that they can get those EPAs and DHAs in through their normal diet.
Nice. All right. We have 10 minutes left of this call. I can't believe how fast this has gone. And the can of worms. Here's the can of worms. You ready? I love this question. Perimenopause and menopause, is there anything that you can do nutrition-wise to stall or lessen the effects of everything that's happening in the perimenopause and menopause states as we go from all of our females go from 40 to 50, 50 to 60, all of these things where we don't have estrogen happen to us? Is there anything nutrition-wise we can be doing to stall, help, aid, and whatever other word that you can come up with to help?
You know, one of the things that when you go onto the Calton Nutrition site, I have a quote there that says, health is not something that you biologically lose as you age. It's something that you build or give away a little each day in what you do and what you don't do. And when we're talking about menopause and we're talking about the effects that that can have on the body, there's no doubt that the body goes through changes, hormonal changes, and it goes through changes, and we feel the effects of these. But I'll tell you that for at least with our clients and our experiences, that the more, again, it all comes down to those effects are going to be dramatically increased in a micronutrient deficient individual. And that's because, as Mira mentioned earlier, every one of those essential micronutrients, and again, we call them essential because the body absolutely has to have them to function perfectly, or to function at all in all reality. And so the more deficient we are in those, the more pronounced so many of these side effects of menopause are. So the night sweats and the aches and the pains and all the different things that are associated with the hormone fluctuations. Don't forget, micronutrients control hormones. They control genes. They control everything in the body. And so my advice to our clients and to everyone who reads our book and that we come in contact with is the most important thing is to become sufficient in those micronutrients. If you look at the research, if you look at the nutritional research and the medical research and the things that are actually preventing many of these side effects of menopause, they're all going to come back to those vitamin Ds and the calcium and the omega-3s and all those micronutrients that control the hormones in the body.
Got it. Okay. And what else? Hang on. I got to go back to Twitter here for a minute. I thought it was going to take a little bit longer. I see what it is. Okay. The people want to know what nutrients is. What is nutrients?
When I got sick, we started finding out that it was all about the micronutrients. So we found out there's something called micronutrient competition happening, which basically means that when you take two micronutrients, say vitamin A and vitamin D at the same time, they go into your body, and in order to be absorbed, they have to find a receptor site. Now, the problem is A and D want the same receptor site. So they have a competition within your body to go in and to be absorbed. So one can go in and one can't go in. Therefore, you urinate it out like most doctors will tell you that it all goes that way. So once we realize that there's micronutrient competition occurring, Jason came up with this brilliant idea that I would separate out each of my specific vitamins and minerals and take them throughout the day, which meant that I had a handful before every meal and after every meal. So once we learned about these competitions and were able to eliminate them, I thought, okay, well, I'm not doing this for the rest of my life, and either would anyone else
really?
Who is sane,
yeah.
Even if it did help me. So what we did is we created a product called Nutrients, and Nutrients is actually the multivitamin reinvented. We have a patent pending on it. And what it is it's two beverages that are all natural, no artificial colors, no artificial sweeteners, no artificial flavors, nothing. I mean, it's so pure because we have to take it every day. And it's a beverage in the morning and a beverage at night. And what they are is they're drink mixes with all of your micronutrients that you'll need for your entire day. And we've separated them into two distinct formulas. The AM is different than the PM, so that the micronutrients in each packet do not compete with each other, so it is much better absorbed by the body. It does the same thing as that horrible regimen I used to have to do, but now it's actually yummy and delicious, and I can just drink it twice a day. So it's a new product. It's on our website at Nutrients, spelled Nutreince.com. And we just launched it. It took 6 years for us to perfectly formulate it and get the flavors just right. And it's fantastic. We're really enjoying having it out there and getting great feedback from people every day.
Yeah, definitely. Jason, do you have anything to add there?
Well, early in my career, you know, we talked a little bit about my early career. I used to own health food stores, health day spas, and health clubs. And so, you know, I'm very familiar with people coming into the health food store, and the first thing they ask is, you know, what can I use to lose weight? Or, you know, I've always been, you know, the first answer I would always give people is, let's get you on a good multivitamin. Let's get you taking those essential micronutrients first before we start worrying about how to lose weight, because as we talked about earlier in the show, losing weight often leads to micronutrient deficiency. So I'm in the habit of selling so many different vitamins. I've always been a big vitamin advocate. And the real problem with those vitamins is that they tend to just to throw all of them into a pill. And, of course, they leave out all the calcium and the magnesium and all the bulky minerals because they're too bulky and they're too expensive. And so you end up getting a lot of B vitamins and a lot of C, which you really shouldn't be taking too much of anyway if you're on statins, kind of thrown into a pill. And it's the vitamins, most vitamins today are kind of formulated the same way that the 70 years ago when the first vitamin came out. They just throw it into a pill and give it to you. But I think what we've done with nutrients here is mapping out all those micronutrient competitions, making it into a liquid form so, you know, so many people can't take pills, especially some of our older clients. And we've made it so it's convenient so that you can actually absorb it. It's definitely helped a lot of our clients. We're very proud of it. It's something we don't talk about a lot because, you know, our main message is food first. We're really, really big on food first. But we do believe that there is a place for a supplement and a healthy diet. And for those individuals who, like us, aren't perfect with their diet every day, we definitely think that a supplement is a great way to, as an insurance policy, to make sure that you are micronutrient sufficient day in and day out.
Yeah, this might also, I hear you on the food first thing, but this, when I look at this, I think of my dad, who is a stroke patient, a stroke survivor and a kidney cancer survivor, and I think, boy, this could probably help someone. I don't know if I'm looking at your blood thinner stuff. It looks like it's okay with vitamin K issues, but could help somebody who's ill.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've worked with so many different clients.
Yeah.
The
thing is, the benefit for everybody ends up being a little bit different. I mean, sure. We've had clients that have taken it, you know, just as a general thing, and then all of a sudden their eyes get all of a sudden better. They've been wearing glasses their whole life. But what we've done is, what they don't realize is, the 6 milligrams of lutein that are in our formulation, there's no other multivitamin with 6 milligrams of lutein. And so that's their little side effect. I mean, we put so many extra little benefits into this formulation, and it really does satisfy the needs of so many different people. And not only that, a lot of people really, just like Jason said, 40% can't take pills and don't want to take a vitamin. This is a great solution for them. Diabetics, there's no sugar, so all the lap band and all the, you know, people who have gotten bariatric surgery, this is safe for them because they have to take a liquid or a chewable. And most of those things, we've checked all the rest. So many of them are loaded with sugar, which, you know, you shouldn't give someone sugar in a vitamin because they work against each other.
Right. So you guys, I'm just going to say this. You guys seem so, I've talked to a lot of people on this radio show, Invest Ever You, over the past 5 years. And the one thing that's striking me that's different about you guys versus so many people that I've talked to is the research and the travel and so forth. I'm curious what your moment was where you went, hi, I know what we're going to do.
You mean, are you referring to the vitamin or just in general?
Just in general. I'm curious when you both said, I know what we're going to do. We're going to do
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I mean, probably about 5 years into our travel, we kind of looked at each other and we said, you know, what are we going to do with this experience? What are we going to do with the information that we've gathered? And I think it would just kind of happen one day. We said, you know, we're going to write a book. And literally within just days, first thing we did was we brainstormed for a name. And the first name that we came up with, we kind of stuck with the whole way through. And Mira and I sat down, and it just, so much of the book literally just poured out of us. I guess that's probably the best way that I would say it. We had so much of this information we wanted to get out. And you know, I think about 5 years in, we just said, you know, we have to do something, and we really want to write a guide that people can use. It doesn't matter what kind of diet you're following. We're not going to be dictators. We're going to let people kind of find their own pathway based on the knowledge that we had. And we sat down and we wrote this book probably in about, what'd you say, about 5 months?
Yeah.
Pretty much you just
designed it
and did the whole thing. And it was interesting how we wrote the book, because what would happen is Mira would take chapter 1 and I would take chapter 2. We would give each other maybe a few days with that chapter, and then we would switch chapters. And the only rule was you can delete anything you want, but then the person who started the chapter gets to have final say. So then after a few days of that, switch back. And that's how we did every single chapter in the book. It was both of us writing it.
Love it. All right. Well, I hope you guys will come on again because it's been just a wealth of information. And I'd like to just start getting you introduced to, or our people introduced to who you are and what your message is and everything that you have to offer. And we'll start doing that.
We would love to answer any questions they have. Absolutely.
Awesome.
That would be
okay.
Great. We would love that.
All right. So, everybody, you can find more information about the Kaltons at kaltonnutrition.com. And you can buy their book, Naked Calories. That's available wherever books are sold. And I thank you both so much for being with us today. And I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful day. Thank you, Elizabeth.
You too. Thank you for having us.
Bye-bye.
All right, take care.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.